Welcome to Peak Health, a radio show dedicated to empowering you to take back control of your health so that you can have the freedom to live the life that you want. I'm Lisa Morse, naturopathic physician on the island at Fern Cove Natural Medicine. I'm dedicated to helping you uncover the root cause of your symptoms so that you can get back on the road to feeling well again.
And I'm Claire DeNice, certified health and wellness coach and a personal trainer. Our show is going to bring you information to help you take charge of your health. We're going to cover topics like IBS, heartburn, thyroid disorders, autoimmune diseases, osteoporosis, nutrition, and lots more.
So today we're going to continue our list of the secrets to vitality. Last time we talked about water.
Movement,
diet, sleep.
Right.
Four things. Yeah.
They're so simple and yet pretty complex and hard to implement.
But also powerful, I have to say.
Nice that they're all lifestyle things, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So the one we're going to start with today is rest.
Okay. That sounds simple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is simple. Well, not necessarily simple to implement, but I want to say that the body does most of its healing when we're in what's called the parasympathetic nervous system state. For those of you who don't know what that is, there's two branches to what we call our autonomic nervous system. And that is the nervous system that's divided into the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. So it's not beyond our conscious control. It's an unconscious part of our nervous system. So the sympathetic is what is we call the fight or flight response. It's when we perceive danger, when we're in a state of stress. The opposite is the parasympathetic nervous system, and that's what's called rest and digest state. This is where we digest our food and where healing can occur. So resting puts us in the parasympathetic nervous system state. And it's very important to give our bodies that rest, and actually outside of sleeping.
Oh, so are you saying sleep is not resting?
Oh, no. Sleep is resting, but it shouldn't be the only time that you rest is when you sleep. I'm talking about conscious rest, whereas sleeping is unconscious. So many times people are constantly going in life. You know, too many tasks, too many obligations, and their body is in a constant state of stress or sympathetic nervous system. So when you think about type A personalities, these are the people that actually often come down with fibromyalgia or heart disease. It's not a coincidence. There have been plenty of studies to show that people with type A personalities generally have poorer health.
Wow. How come we never hear about this?
Well, conventional medicine tend to be more focused on pharmaceuticals than lifestyle measures, when in fact lifestyle plays a huge part in our health. And so I want our listeners to consider something. If you're not resting, you know, investigating what the reason is that you're not resting. Are you uncomfortable just being by yourself? Is it uncomfortable not achieving something all the time? Or, and you know, is your self-worth tied up with your achievements?
Oh, those sound sort of like health coaching type topics.
Yeah, something that you would do, Claire.
Yeah, and you know, I know for sure that we are all wrapped up in achievements in our society. But I'm guessing that as a nation, that's not helping our health.
Right, definitely. I think it's contributing to worse health. And I think it's so important for each of us to have intention about taking time each day to rest. You know, it could be just listening to music, talking with a friend or spouse, doing some deep breathing, you know, anything that you feel gives you a sense of relaxation.
You know, that reminds me that when I was younger, I would just sit and listen to music, but now I'm always doing something else.
Yep.
Multitasking is a big thing.
It's huge.
Which they're now validating that multitasking is actually not very efficient, that you're not focused on either tasks and you spend a lot of time switching.
Absolutely.
And then I'm also reminded of the song by Frank Sinatra. It's got that part in it that says do and be, like do be do be do. So we want to do some things. We also want time to just be, you're saying.
Absolutely.
And part of that, to me, which is a surprise, is that resting is actually good for your digestion.
Absolutely, yes.
I like that, rest and digest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't digest your food if you're not resting. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And we know digestion is huge for your health. Coming from the naturopath who focuses on digestive conditions.
And you can see us both nodding our heads.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, yeah, we didn't spend a huge amount of time talking about rest, as maybe as much as we did on some of the other topics, but, you know, it is doesn't mean it's any less important.
Well, you know, let's throw out a little challenge to people.
Oh, yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10. Notice during your day if you're resting, and by the end of the day, you can give yourself a score on how much you rested.
Yeah.
Awake.
Yeah.
But not doing anything.
Right. That sounds good. I like it.
I'll try it.
Yeah. Cool. Me too. All right. So let's move on to the next secret to vitality. And this one is recreation. Don't underestimate the healing power of fun.
Fun. Oh, I love fun.
Yes.
Do you think that a lot of us no longer know how to have fun?
Oh, absolutely. When I ask my patients what they do for fun, many of them are simply stumped. So obviously we know that eating healthy and getting adequate sleep is important for good health, but taking part in something you enjoy is so good for your health. In our society, again, back to that achieving thing, you know, achieving is important, but also, you know, we get this message that leisure and fun activities are indulgent. But my take is that they're essential for good health.
You know, I ask my clients what they do for fun also,
mm-hmm.
and often get a blank look.
Really?
And then they'll say, well, I hang out with my kids.
Yeah.
Or I watch television.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that if we are given a little time, we can think of things that are equally more fun than either of those two things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that fun is good for us and that we don't have to feel guilty for having fun.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. I've even heard that if you have a really good belly laugh, it's equivalent to like an hour of exercise.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like fun and things that we enjoy doing, they actually restore us, those activities, and they help us to cope better with stress. And there was a study done actually in 2009 that showed that people that spent more time engaging in enjoyable activities, you know, they had a greater psychological and physical well-being. This included, you know, greater positive emotions, life satisfaction, lower depression scores, and actually lower blood pressure and cortisol levels.
Well, what's the deal with cortisol? What does that do?
So cortisol is a stress hormone. It's released when we are stressed out. And so we know that stress is a huge contributor to many health conditions. And so if you know, having fun reduces our cortisol, you know, it's helpful for reducing, you know, those health conditions.
Like what health conditions?
Well, actually, I'd have to say almost any health condition, you name it, can be associated with stress. It's a pretty bold statement, but I do believe it's true. Heart disease, fertility, immunity, cancer, bone health, pain, memory, anxiety, you know, the list is basically endless.
That is a really broad spectrum.
Yeah, there's even more, I'm sure.
So taking part in activities that you thoroughly enjoy or fun, as you say,
mm-hmm.
You can reduce your stress, your cortisol level, and the risk for various health conditions.
Yeah, it's that simple.
Cool.
Yeah, and I encourage the listeners to try it. You know, maybe make a list of things, that 10 things.
Well, that would be tough for a lot of people,
yeah,
I'm sure.
But that you would feel would be enjoyable or fun. And, you know, each day, do one of them.
Well, I'm going to try it out.
I think
it's great. And if I had a boss, I'd tell them that I had to go play for an hour every day.
Yeah. I just want to say, like, I want the listeners to know that, you know, you can disregard the message that from our society that you must always be achieving, and just believe that you need to have fun to be healthy. So
I think it's a good way for us to be a little more creative as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And however we want to define that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay. So let's move on to our next secret, and that is breathing.
Breathing.
Yeah.
I know how to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, breathing is usually a pretty unconscious thing that we do. Otherwise, we wouldn't be alive anymore. But I want to say that a lot of us actually breathe very shallowly or, you know, shallowly and can sometimes actually breathe too fast. And so with breathing, it's important for keeping our oxygen levels up and lowering our carbon dioxide levels. And so we know that oxygen is needed by every cell in the body. And I'm just going to mention something that we talked about in the last segment. Remember our mitochondria? They're in each cell and they...
I do.
Yeah, they help us create energy. And so the mitochondria, what did we say last time? Oh yeah, exercising increases the size of mitochondria. But anyways, the mitochondria need oxygen to make energy. And so if we're breathing very shallowly, then we're not getting oxygen to those cells to make energy.
So Lisa, that reminds me when you're talking about shallow breathing,
uh-huh,
that sometimes people actually breathe opposite. And I've had to sort of teach that in my yoga classes.
Yeah.
That when you breathe in, some people actually pull in on their bellies.
Right.
And then let their bellies relax when they're breathing out. And it actually should be the reverse. Mm-hmm. So when you let your belly relax, your diaphragm lowers and it creates more space to take a deeper breath.
Absolutely. Yeah, we call it abdominal breathing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, most people just breathe into their chest, which is only the top part of the lungs, versus the abdominal breathing helps to bring the air all the way to the... fill up the whole lungs. Yeah, so that's huge. What else did I want to say? Oh, I want to say also just about... I learned this from a man named Robert Lippmann. He's an Islander. And he taught me, I went to a class of his called Buteyko breathing. And basically, he had a saying, and that was, you should, let me see if I could get this right. Breathe through your mouth as much as you eat through your nose. Yeah, so we shouldn't be breathing through our mouth. It actually causes a state of stress in our body. We should only really be breathing through our nose. And so that's something that kind of sticks with me. And so I do notice sometimes when I get stressed out that I'm breathing through my mouth.
Well, and that might be fairly typical of when you're stressed. So yeah. That would be another reason not to be stressed.
Yeah.
One of the things I've also heard is that our exhales should be a little longer than our inhales.
Right.
And one way to practice that is you're inhaling through your nose, of course. And then if you take a straw and you exhale through the straw, it forces the rate of your exhale to go down. And so your exhale will be longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps to clean out that sort of semi-stagnant air that collects in the bottom of the lungs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing with having the exhale being longer is it actually stimulates the vagus nerve when we do that. And the vagus nerve is actually involved in the parasympathetic nervous system. So if you remember what that is, the parasympathetic is rest and digest when healing occurs in our body. And so when we're exhaling, the diaphragm moves in a way that stimulates the vagus nerve. So it's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So regarding breathing, I just encourage the listeners to, you know, pay attention to your breath, you know, through the day and, you know, make sure you're breathing through your nose and, you know, you're taking slow breaths and you're not, breathing too quickly.
It's about 6 breaths
per
minute.
That's what I've learned is a good amount. Yeah.
And I think controlling your breathing as opposed to just automatically breathing can actually contribute to lowering your blood pressure and lowering your heart rate or your pulse.
Yeah. Just taking, that's another way to relax too. We talked about rest. Yeah. Rest.
You know, just... go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Should I share square breathing briefly?
Sure.
It's a simple yoga breathing exercise where you breathe in for a certain number, filling your lungs all the way up. And then you hold for the same number, keeping your lungs full of air, And then you exhale, completely emptying your lungs for the same length of time. And then you hold that with your lungs empty for the same length of time.
Okay.
And you do 3, 4, 5 squares.
Okay.
You know, inhale, hold, exhale, hold. And it helps you to just take control of your breathing. And sometimes it helps relax. I sometimes do it if I'm having trouble falling asleep.
Mm, good.
Works really well.
I like it. Nice. Okay.
Square right. breathing.
Yeah. All right. So our next secret to vitality is meaningful work or purpose. And having a meaningful work or purpose in your life can greatly contribute to better health.
So, okay. What does that mean? To have a purpose.
Yeah. I believe, well, having a purpose means to know why you are here on this earth. You know, what is your message or role that you are here to complete? And I want to reference a book called Blue Zones, written about communities in the world where people are more likely to live past 100. The author, Dan Buettner, identified that those who live into their hundreds have several common factors. And one of them is having a sense of purpose in life. And, you know, as well, there's studies that show that lower life expectancy with those without a sense of purpose. So more heart disease and Alzheimer's associated with no sense of purpose in life.
Huh. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
More heart disease and Alzheimer's just from not having a purpose?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. You know, it can take some work to uncover what your sense of purpose is, but, you know, just keep in mind that it can have a profound impact on your health.
So I guess my first question is, well, where does your purpose come from? But as I think about it, it's going to change over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you're a parent, that role changes when your kids leave home.
Yeah.
If you retire from a job, that purpose would change. So it has to be somewhat conscious, right? To
Absolutely.
Know what your purpose is.
Yeah. I mean, I would say most people get their sense of purpose from their career, but you know, can get it anywhere else. It's all individual, you know, your role as mother or father, your role as a member in your community, you know, maybe you're a volunteer, or maybe you just even keep your eyes open whenever you're out and about and, you know, looking for people who need help. It can be that simple.
So I don't have to be a high-powered executive running an amazing company.
No.
I could just smell the roses.
No. Yeah, totally. Yeah, simple things can give us purpose in life. And I do have to say one challenge is with elderly people sometimes. You know, they have retired from their careers. But like I said, purpose isn't exclusive to career. You know, maybe it's a hobby or learning a new skill or caring for your grandchildren. What's important is that each person finds out what their purpose is, whatever it might be.
Yeah, you know, another what I might call it also is just like feeling like you make a difference.
Oh, yeah.
In some small way.
Mm-hmm.
You're sharing art or you are caring for other people or mm-hmm. you're making the world a better place in some small way.
Yeah, I agree. It's good. All right.
Pretty simple.
Yes.
Harder to do than talk about.
Sometimes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So next topic, or next secret to vitality is healthy relationships. Did you know, Claire, that being alone and isolated can be as unhealthy for you as smoking, high blood pressure, and obesity?
You know, I know something about that, but, you know, it is hard to imagine, and I guess I can believe it.
Yeah. Just to reference the Blue Zones book again, Dan Buettner states that committing to a life partner adds 3 years of to your life expectancy.
Wow. Before I comment on that, I just would like to remind people that you're listening to KVSH, and this is Peak Health with Claire and Lisa, the Island Health Sisters. Okay, back to this thought. I don't have a life partner. Am I going to die sooner than you?
Well, let's not go that far. You know, even if we don't have a life partner, we can have healthy relationships with others. Having good friends and close family members can help buffer the impact of stress, you know, which is a major contributor to ill health.
So, okay, good friends then are important for good health.
Yeah. Just think about spending time with others whose company you enjoy. The laughter that you have releases stress and releases endorphins, which are feel-good chemicals. And these chemicals also have been shown to decrease our perception of pain. Yeah, there's been studies showing that there's those people who have strong relationships have a 50% decreased likelihood of dying prematurely.
That's a high percentage.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess that's why we started off this segment saying that being lonely can be as unhealthy as smoking.
Oh.
Yeah. Did you know about Japan, that Japan has the highest, that country has the highest life expectancy?
No.
Yet it's one of the largest consumers of tobacco.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
I would just interject here that we both perceive, I think, that smoking is definitely not conducive to great health.
Right.
And we didn't even put it in our secrets to vitality because it's not a secret.
Exactly. Exactly. We're not condoning smoking, certainly. We're just trying to get our listeners to know that, you know, being lonely is not good for your health. So just back to the Japan thing, you know, one theory is that the elderly people in Japan, they live with their children and grandchildren. And these, you know, relationships are nurturing to the body and often, you know, can be keeping the elderly people healthier there.
So, you know, one thing I would say about relationships is it's a topic that comes up a lot with my coaching, is that we sometimes are in relationships that are familiar, but not necessarily optimal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so when we're talking about having healthy relationships, we're talking about ones where that it does contribute to, you know, good health, and it's a desirable state for us.
Right.
Not necessarily. So I don't want to say people should get out of relationships necessarily if they're not healthy, because oftentimes there's a lot that any individual can do to improve the relationship, at least within their own countenance.
Yeah.
But certainly something to think about in terms of relationships, how you can make them better.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, I do think it's important for people to evaluate their relationships and see which ones are serving them and which ones aren't. But I also agree with, you know, and make changes if you can. Like, it can be vital for your health. But also on the same, I agree with you, Claire, that changing, you know, maybe the person you're in a relationship with, you're not happy with some of the ways that they are, but you can't change them. But you can change yourself. And when you change yourself, actually, there's going to be some kind of reaction, you know, on the other end. And hopefully it would be a positive one.
Yeah. I heard a statistic, since you were throwing around a percentage a minute ago, that a relationship should be 50% good and 50% great.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty high bar there.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. I like it. All right. Okay. I think I just want to say one more thing about healthy relationships, that, you know, there's been studies showing that, you know, having healthy relationships are correlated with better blood pressure, lower depression, and, you know, increased immune function. So,
you know, really what I like about all this, Lisa, is that there's so much that we can have control over, that the whole dynamic of medicines has in some ways come to be, well, if this isn't right, then I'll get a pill for it, or I'll, you know, in other ways address it outside myself.
Yeah.
And almost all of these things are related. It's like a domino effect. One thing affects the next, and they're all within our control, and we don't have to conquer them, if that's a strong word, but if we just make small changes, we can be moving in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like, you know, we want to look deeper into sometimes what's going on with our health. You know, like you said, there's the pill thing, but then it's like, oh, well, wait, let me evaluate these other areas in my life, and where do I maybe need to make some changes, and, you know, just going deeper.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So we're on our last secret
How
to
sad.
Vitality. I know. You know what? There's probably more secrets to vitality. Maybe we'll have to do part three at some point. But anyways, for this segment here, we're on the last one is spiritual connection. And I want to say that there's a growing body of evidence that there's healing power in taking part in spiritual activities and having a faith in a higher power or something greater than yourself, whatever it may be, you know, whatever the label is that you have. Could be God, Allah, Buddha, Qi, Tao. It could be spirit. It could be universal mind.
So we're not talking about religion necessarily. Some people will associate spirituality with religion, but this is about having some type of spiritual connection that basically the individual gets to define.
Right. I would agree. Yeah. And then I just want to mention some, you know, studies have shown that there's various health benefits from being spiritual, lowering blood pressure. We've heard that one a lot. Protecting against heart disease, improving surgical outcomes and lessening recovery time, improving depression. And one that I think is the most important of all is improving the ability to cope with stress and lessening its negative effects. And here we go with stress again, but stress is such a huge component of poor health, you know, causing so many health conditions. So
I don't know if I said this before, but really it's almost impossible not to be stressed.
It's true.
In our modern day lives, but there is the option of working towards balance. And I think we will have to do a show just on stress.
I think so too. Yeah.
But you know, actually what you're telling me then again is that being spiritual in however you choose to be can actually decrease your blood pressure.
Well, it's not to say that there's a cause-effect relationship, but it's what we call a correlation. So, you know, studies have shown that people who are spiritual have lower blood pressures. Yeah.
So what's the mechanism for this, do you think?
Well, it's really hard for me to say. You know, it's not my place to say it, but I mean, I can make a hypothesis. The idea that believing in, you know, a higher power or something greater than yourself, that's maybe taking care of us or watching out for us, it allows us to worry less, to let go and to live in the moment, which allows us to not be so stressed.
You know, in The Road Less Traveled, Scott Peck, the very first line is, life is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a relief to know that, oh, it's not supposed to be easy and perfect, you know.
Exactly.
So I think the idea of something greater than yourself kind of is comforting.
Absolutely.
That we don't have to be the knows-all, end-all.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be so varied for people how they want to express a spiritual connection.
Yes.
For me, I know a walk in the woods on a beautiful day is huge, and someone else wants to light candles and chant, and another person may incorporate it into their religious beliefs. It's just so hugely, you know, you could even go to the solstice parade in Seattle on Sunday.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, I definitely think it's different for everyone. You know, it could be about a higher power. And then also it could be about being more spiritual, could be about being conscious of the good in yourself and, excuse me, and the good in each and every person, you know, despite that we all have our faults, looking for the best in others and ourselves, you know, helps to create calm and peace in ourselves, and which definitely reduces stress and contributes to good health.
So it's really a moving target, and it looks like it can help us reduce stress, which leads to all kinds of health issues, but it can also help us reduce other health problems.
Yep.
And what our perspective on the spiritual connection is that it's contributing to better health overall.
Absolutely. Yeah, whatever it is for each person.
That's a lot of information.
Yeah.
I love how much of it was pretty simple things and things that we can do to improve our health. It doesn't have to be overwhelming, I think, but it is pretty amazing.
Yeah. So let's just list them all off again here. Yes. Let's list them all off. So we started with sleep, and then we had diet, and then we had water, and we had movement or exercise, and then we had rest, recreation, breathing, healthy relationships, meaningful work and purpose, and spirituality.
Very good. You remember them all in exactly that order.
Yeah. And I hope that our talk has empowered people to take charge of their health. And, you know, I really encourage you to try implementing these things and see how profound they can be in your life. And don't try to tackle them all at one time. You know, you could implement, you know, a few things at a time. But that's something that you've actually focused on, Claire, right?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Coaching really helps people move forward in a direction they'd like to go.
Okay.
Closing the gap between where they are and where they want to be.
Nice. Okay. So we're signing off now, and we hope you enjoyed our show. Next time, we're going to be talking about irritable bowel syndrome.
That's right. Dr. Lisa is going to give us the scoop on poop. Don't worry, we'll try to be delicate. And we're going to uncover the cause of your IBS.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm Dr. Lisa Morse.
And I'm Clarity Knife.
This is Peak Health Radio Show, where we're dedicated to educating and inspiring you, our listeners, to take back control of your health.